WLAK 1260 AM Amory. And always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Brian Clark. More than 370 flights in the U.S. have been canceled today, continuing what's been a difficult week of travel for thousands of air passengers like Lily. She was trying to fly out of Newark on Saturday.
10 minutes before we're supposed to start to board, they just got over the intercom and was like, yeah, the flight to Indiana is canceled. And I was like, you're kidding.
Weather could also complicate travel today. The threat of severe storms for much of the country. Meanwhile, 60 million people in 14 states in the West and South are under heat alerts. Police in Baltimore looking for suspects in an overnight mass shooting that left two people dead and 28 others hurt, two of them critically. Authorities say it happened at a block party. A new ABC News Ipsos poll finds 53% of people believe the Supreme Court justices decide cases mainly on the basis of their partisan political views. And the White House says that when President Biden travels to Europe for NATO meetings, he will meet with King Charles and British Prime Minister Rishi Sunak. This is ABC News. CIA Director Bill Burns, speaking in England on Saturday, said the war in Ukraine has damaged Russia and that the CIA has ramped up its recruiting efforts in Russia because of disaffection caused by the war. Meanwhile, it was a fifth consecutive night of protests across France after the fatal police shooting of an unarmed teenager. More than 700 people were arrested, says ABC's Inez de la Cotara in Paris.
Slightly less violence in Paris last night, but we were here on the Champs-Élysées and there was still a very heavy police presence. We did see protesters clashing with police. The big flashpoints last night were further south, cities like Marseille and Montpellier, for instance, rioters setting cars and buildings on fire and even looting stores in some cases.
French President Macron canceled a planned trip to Germany because of the situation. Australia became the first country to allow psychiatrists to prescribe psychedelic drugs to treat conditions like depression and PTSD. Brian Clark, ABC News.
News is brought to you by Gingras Thompson & Wachs, a statewide team of personal injury lawyers getting you the justice you deserve. Call 855-954-1186 for a free consultation. The Maggie Dawn Show.
Wisconsin's manner of funding local government is nearly singular in the country. That cheese stands alone, if you will. It hasn't been working in Milwaukee. It hasn't been working in Rhinelander. It hasn't been working in La Crosse, Green Bay, Madison, Kenosha, Racine. I don't care what you pick. It ain't working.
The Maggie Dawn Show, Monday through Friday at 6 p.m. on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. Up North News Radio with Pat Kreitlow.
I have Corrine Hendrickson, part of the Wisconsin Early Childhood Action Needed group.
We spend $500 on our infants and toddlers on average. If you go to the other countries, you're talking about $11,000 on average in Europe and the other developed countries. It makes a difference. They end up spending less on their K-12 system. They end up spending less on their colleges. They end up spending less on jail.
Up North News Radio with Pat Kreitlow.
Weekday morning, 6 till 8.
On your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. Wisconsin farmers are helping protect some plant species from the impacts of climate change. They're doing it by restoring native prairies next to the food they grow. Mike Mullen recently spoke with the owners of the cider farm in Mount Horeb.
Deirdre Birmingham and her husband have operated a cider tree farm for 2 decades. But it's not just apples they're producing. Creating a habitat for pollinators is another priority, with a variety of prairie plants and shrubs running through sections of the orchard. Because the farm is a multifaceted landscape of forest and crop trees and prairie, it's seen as relatively buffered from climate change. Experts say as extreme heat and drought wither plants, obliterate pollen, and dry up water sources, agricultural settings like these could help a lot more species survive.
We're a very diverse topography, and we have neighbors that are doing similarly on their land, and that's important to get these contiguous pieces of land.
Birmingham says not only does it provide an ecological boost, but it also can help with profits, pointing to an example from last year.
There's also honeybees kept on farms in the area, and we had a sudden blossom after a long, cool spring, a sudden 90 degrees hit, and things fast-forwarded with apples just blossoming fast and furiously.
The UN Environment Program has found that food and agriculture currently drive 70% of species loss. But there's hope farms like Birmingham's will help reverse the damage. Mike Moen, Wisconsin News Connection. Find our rate trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org. This story was produced with original reporting from Leela Nargi for the Food and Environment Reporting Network.
And you're listening to Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell.
The law firm of Gingras Thompson & Wachs has a track record of making life-changing, positive differences for their clients. $5.25 million to a woman who suffered brain injuries and her husband passed away when struck by a drunk driver. $1 million to three different individuals injured by drunk drivers. $1 million settlement to a man injured in a motorcycle accident. Call Gingras Thompson & Wachs, 855-954-1186. Up North News Radio with Pat Kreitlow. Wisconsin's home for daily conversations about the state's latest headlines and stories. Weekday mornings from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
Welcome. Grab your favorite morning beverage and join us for Morning Cannolis with Jim Santel. You don't know me, but I'm your brother. Sampling the news desserts of the week, here is your host, Jim Santel.
Thank you for once again joining me for this, our second hour on the first day of July 2023. Going into the 4th of July observance, the celebration of our nation, at a sobering time in America as we talk about at least three major decisions of our United States Supreme Court of this past week that are already changing who we are, not only in terms of our operations in and outside of classrooms, but employment settings, and fundamentally redefining the community in which we live. Reasons for great concern as we go forward into this 4th of July holiday. We're talking right now about this decision of just this past Thursday in which the Supreme Court rejected about 40 years of affirmative action policy and programs and protocols for universities and colleges around our nation. Giving you this morning some dramatic readings, if you will, from some of the things that the Supreme Court justices have said to underscore my two major theses. One is that we have in the Supreme Court today a fundamental schism between what some members of the Supreme Court think America is all about and what others believe it's all about. That comes through loudly and clearly, not only in this opinion and in the dissenting opinions in the affirmative action case, but also in the other cases we're going to talk about this hour, including the rejection of President Biden's student loan forgiveness plan. And finally, in the last portion of this hour, Supreme Court rejecting the position of the state of Colorado that would require that a business provider there who's providing website services to couples who are getting married, that she not engage in discriminatory statements and conduct, especially with respect to same-sex couples. We're going to get to that as well. Again, this fundamental schism, not only about who we are as a nation, but also what our Constitution and the statutes and laws that have been enacted under it require of all of us. Ketanji Brown Jackson virulently opposing what happened here in this affirmative action case says this: the court has come to rest on the bottom line conclusion that racial diversity in higher education is only worth potentially preserving insofar as it might be needed to prepare Black Americans and other underrepresented minorities for success in the bunker, not the boardroom. A particularly awkward place to land in light of the history the majority opts to ignore. She goes on to say it would be deeply unfortunate if the Equal Protection Clause actually demanded this perverse, ahistorical, and counterproductive outcome. To impose this result in that clause's name when it requires no such thing, she says, and is therefore to obstruct our collective progress toward the full realization of the clause's promise. That's truly a tragedy for us all, she writes. Justice Roberts comes back. Again, they're plainly responding to each other, even as they're announcing their opinions in writing and in orally. He says, most troubling of all is what the dissent must make these admissions to defend. A judiciary that picks winners and losers, he says, based on the color of their skin. While the dissent would certainly not permit university programs that discriminated against Black and Latino applicants, it is perfectly willing to let the programs here continue, In its view, that is the dissent view, this court is supposed to tell state actors when they have picked the right races to benefit. And Sonia Sotomayor comes back. She says, notwithstanding this court's actions, however, society's progress toward equality cannot be permanently halted. Here's the Commission for the Future. This is what we do. Sonia Sotomayor gives us that roadmap. She says, diversity is now a fundamental American value, housed in our varied and multicultural American community that only continues to grow. The pursuit of racial diversity will go on, she says. Although the court has stripped out almost all uses of race in college admissions, universities can and should continue to use all available tools to meet society's needs for diversity in education. Despite the court's unjustified exercise of power, she says, the opinion today will serve only to highlight the court's own impotence in the face of an America whose cries for equality resound. What commanding language. And there is a commission for you from one of the dissenters, Sonia Sotomayor, certainly joined in by Ketanji Brown Jackson and Elena Kagan, in strong opposition to what our Supreme Court has done in this case involving affirmative action just 2 days or so ago. We will see how this plays out at universities around our nation. The great concern is whether or not we will continue to move toward campuses, both in classroom and out of classroom, that are diverse for the benefit of education, of understanding, and of learning. And that is our summary this morning of the affirmative action case. We've got a couple of callers who have called in and dutifully waiting. Let's hear from them at this time. Joe, let's start with you in Madison. Glad to have you with me again this morning. Joe, your thoughts, comments, questions, or observations?
I'd like you to offer some observations on this. The thought is, one of the race had been considered at many schools, okay, for diversity. Well, in many schools, legacy admissions are considered.
Yes.
The rate is very, very high. And Harvard is a very good one to look at, one of the plaintiffs, I guess, in this particular situation, because as I understand, in Harvard, their 2021 class, 29% of that freshman class were people who were accepted, where legacy was part of the acceptance package for them. So, if you will, it was affirmative action for the rich. Excuse me while I fire up my Fury Mobile here, but there's something that I was never able to take advantage of, or many people aren't able to take advantage of. So if, you know, we want to have a diverse population, how does legacy admission help at all to create a diverse population? How does legacy admission help any social good at all? I would think, and I'd be interested in your reactions to that, that there ought to be some lawsuits coming fast and furious that just because your dad went to this school, why do you get preference in going to this school? Why would that possibly exist? How would that make a difference? Particularly at public schools. I suppose at private, maybe they could still continue. But I if equal protection is the goal, what is served by legacy admission in terms of reaching that goal? I'm interested in your reactions to that. Thanks a lot, Jim.
And Joe, as always, profoundly insightful thoughts. And that's a part of the discussion that's going on right now in the wake of this, right? What are the consequences of this decision that talks about an America, yes, in connection with race, being colorblind, as Justice Thomas and others say, but the implications of that much broader, again, with respect to legacy. If, in fact, you're giving preference to people whose parents and other relatives have been members of the population, the student population before, isn't that also a preference that, at its core, is contrary to what the Supreme Court has said? I would endorse and answer in exactly the way that you packaged into your very question, Joe, which is that's exactly the kind of thing that this opinion has now opened up. What can a university do and what it cannot do, not only in the area of race, that's very, very important, but also more broadly? Legacy comes to the top of the list as a second, maybe a third consideration as well. Those lawsuits are now coming. And how does the Supreme Court then deal with that? Does it at some point down the road determine and impose upon colleges and universities, public and private, both perhaps, an obligation not to consider legacy? parental or other relatives who have been at these universities. Is that next? And if so, is that consistent with what we're hearing today? And if it's not consistent, explain that. Explain that incongruity, if you will. And so I think it's more than just a rhetorical question, Joe. It is the great one, among others, that this affirmative action case, this opinion today, underscores. The language of the dissenters is rife with those kinds of inequality types of considerations, and plainly will animate those lawsuits, which I think are still coming. Thanks so much for the call, Joe. As always, insightful, and we'll continue to think about those questions down the road. Mark, also calling in this morning. Glad to have you with us, Mark, on this and other issues before our Supreme Court these days.
Yeah, thanks, Jim, and thanks to Joe. She's always very concise in what she says. What I find somewhat bemusing is, once again, as I've pointed out in the past, is the failure of the Supreme Court to acknowledge the fact that it is not enumerated in the Constitution that they have the power at all to decide the constitutionality of laws. In fact, as I pointed out before in Federalist 81, that Hamilton warns against, he says, one of the concerns about the Constitution is people are concerned about the Supreme Court seizing the power actually that they're exerting here and deciding the constitutionality of laws, because he says in part of 81 that it's both, unprecedented and dangerous for them, for a court to be able to do this, have this power. And in fact, if race is not a problem any, it was like you're saying, it doesn't exist, then why do we need the 15th Amendment, which says we can't discriminate on the basis of, people cannot be denied rights on the basis of color, and they've denied other, the government ability to do things because it's not enumerated in the Constitution, when in fact that Madison points out in Federalist 44, I believe, that we don't know what every possible contingency Congress might be called upon to address, the nation's problems, that because that would just be, you couldn't do it.
Right,
So that it's included within the general welfare clause that they have the power to promote the general welfare. And I would say promoting diversity is part of the general welfare.
Absolutely.
It's part of the general welfare.
Right,
because let's remember that in the Taney decision, the Dred Scott decision, it's actually more horrible than most of us were taught in high school. The Judge Taney actually said that the black, he didn't even call them citizen. He wouldn't call them citizens. He barely could call them persons. They had no right for anything at all because of the color of the skin.
Lots of things there, Mark, to unpack. Absolutely, historically, and I'm just going to seize upon the one with respect to, the amendments, the reason for the implementation, the passage of those amendments post-Civil War, 14th, 15th Amendments, remedy exactly the kinds of things you're talking about, and an interpretation this week, I think you're offering and others offering, that is contrary to that fundamental notion about what the purpose of the 14th Amendment is all about, equal protection of the laws. Many, many good things there, Mark, to unpack and to think about. Appreciate those comments as well. And Mark, as we're going into a break, will also indicate that in the coming hour here, we're going to chat more about this case and also about the other two cases with respect to student loan forgiveness and also the web designer coming out of the state of Colorado. Let's begin to chat about that matter as well. That is the decision by the United States Supreme Court to reject the president's student loan forgiveness plan, again, fairly decisively in language that is also going to be a part of our discussion this morning. Stay with us for that discussion. Also taking more callers after this break on a very important broadcast here on this Saturday morning as we go into the 4th of July holiday.
To achieving successful jury verdicts and settlements, one law firm stands out above the rest. Gingras Thompson & Wachs, a $6.2 million settlement for a woman permanently paralyzed as a result of medical malpractice. $4.9 million to members of a family injured due to the negligence of a truck driver and his employer. Call Gingras Thompson & Wachs today, 855-954-1186. All in
Gingras, Thompson & Knox, GTWLawyers.com.
My dad says spending time together makes our family stronger. That's why we go to our Family Resource Center. It's got lots of activities for us to do together. Nana says she likes it because she gets to talk with other grown-ups. But I like it because we play and learn with other families and make new friends.
To learn more about services that support children, connect families, and strengthen communities, call Northwest Connection Family Resources at 800-733-KIDS.
If you love them enough to listen to them practice the same song on tuba,
please be done.
Over and over and over and over and over. Then surely you'll check nhtsa.gov/the right seat to make sure they're correctly buckled in the back seat.
Sounds good, honey.
Check today at nhtsa.gov/the right seat. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
People won't give you the real talk on drugs, but it's time we know the facts. Fentanyl is killing people. It's a powerful opioid, often made illegally and commonly mixed with illicit drugs. It can even be pressed into counterfeit pills that resemble prescription medications. Just 2 milligrams, about the size of a few grains of sand, can potentially be lethal. This isn't an ad to scare you, but it is an ad to make you think twice. Get the facts. Go to realdealonfentanyl.com. This message is brought to you by the Ad Council.
We are back this morning talking about all things Supreme Court, a major week in the history of the Supreme Court, and indeed of our entire nation, talking this morning about this case involving accommodations for religious workers, a 9-0 opinion just before the break, and in the previous hour, then talking about the decision by the Supreme Court, a majority, 6-3 majority, rejecting the affirmative action programs at Harvard, UNC, having a dramatic impact upon universities and colleges throughout our nation. Some great calls as well, some great observations about the implications of those orders coming out from listeners. We're talking to more of our listeners in this hour as well. Turning now to the third case in a docket among many decided by the Supreme Court this past term, Supreme Court rejecting the president's student loan forgiveness plan. The Supreme Court in particular just yesterday telling the Biden administration that it has overstepped its authority with its plan to wipe out about $400 billion in student debt. And that, of course, undermining, even dashing the hopes of millions of borrowers around the country and imposing some very unsettling but not necessarily new restrictions from this court on presidential power. Resounding setback, undeniably, for President Biden, the executive branch more generally. He had vowed to help borrowers, as he said, crawl out from under that mountain of debt. The statistics as part of the litigation before the Supreme Court show that more than 45 million people across the country owe about $1.6 trillion in federal loans for college, and that this proposed debt cancellation, which was announced by the president last summer, about a year or so ago, would have been one of the most expensive executive actions in U.S. history, but also an awful lot of predictions about the benefits coming not just to our economy, but also to people generally in our nation. This case, again, a part of a tumultuous term, now not actually done, but the major decisions now done, kind of a trifecta of some major cases. Again, we talked about one of them. That is the affirmative action case, this student loan forgiveness program, and then in our final moments of this hour, talking again about this major blow to gay rights, LGBT rights, accomplished with respect to another decision made by the Supreme Court. The president said today's decision has closed one path, but he promised to pursue some others. He was talking yesterday about the Higher Education Act, summoning his Secretary of Education in to identify new ways of accomplishing some things that the United States Supreme Court has now foreclosed to him and to the executive branch generally and to all of us. So what is this case all about? Well, Chief Justice John Roberts, again, he's writing for the majority, and a major decision that is reverberating from other things that he has said about the authority of the executive, the limited authority of the executive to act on behalf of Americans. He writes, he says that a 2000 law, which had allowed the Secretary of Education to waive or modify, that's the language of the statute, that language, those relevant statutes, those regulations, that you can do that in emergencies, had not authorized this administration, the Biden administration, the present Secretary of Education, to cancel the debt. He made the different distinction between modifying, waiving, and completely transforming was the word he used, and that was too far. He said the Secretary's plan has modified the cited provisions and went on to say, only in the same sense that the French Revolution modified the status of the French nobility. It has abolished them and supplanted them with a new regime entirely. That's the Supreme Court Justice, the Chief Justice, writing about what the executive has done here. Needless to say, the three dissenters on the Supreme Court, you know their names well, bitterly, once again, strongly dissenting. Elena Kagan here is summarizing her dissent from the bench. Again, this rare move, we have not seen this before, virulent dissents from the bench. A sign of deep disagreement among this court, once again, about who we are as Americans, about what the law does and does not require. Siding with six Republican-led states that sued to block the program, she said, the majority opinion today is opportunistic, unprincipled, and infected by politics. Those are strong words coming from any Supreme Court justices. She goes on to say this, from the first page to the last, today's opinion departs from the demands of judicial restraint. And this is the basis upon which an awful lot of us thought these cases would not even be decided. A thing called standing. She goes on to say this. At the behest of a party that has suffered no injury, the majority decides a contested public policy issue properly belonging to the politically accountable branches and the people they represent. And again, underscoring this question about whether or not there is standing at all. There's a real damage by the people who brought this lawsuit against the president's plan, this program to forgive debt. Along the way, the cases themselves coming from some six Republican-led states, Nebraska, Missouri, Arkansas, Iowa, Kansas, South Carolina, two individuals, all of them suing to stop the new plan. They had reached this decision, if you will, internal to their own litigation side of the house, that this plan is inconsistent with something called the Major Questions Doctrine. So a little civics this morning. Major Questions Doctrine, what does that basically say? Congress, it says, must speak particularly clearly when authorizing these kinds of things. A piece of doctrine that's not really articulated specifically, that language not used by the Supreme Court, basically says that the Supreme Court has rejected and can reject agency claims of authority, like here, when the underlying claim of authority concerns an issue of vast economic and political significance. When it's very big, when it's huge, when it's large, that's a part of it. And second, when Congress has not clearly empowered the agency with authority over the issue. That's something called the Major Questions Doctrine. And again, the people challenging the president's action here, his plan here to forgive this debt, used that policy to allege that this had overstepped the executive authority. The Major Questions Doctrine implicated here, too big, and too new, according to what the Supreme Court has said in the past in other cases. Last June, the court had used this particular doctrine, which it again invoked here, in a decision that curtailed the EPA in its power to address climate change, also ruled on civil grounds that the CDC was not authorized to impose a moratorium on evictions. Again, that happening in previous terms of this court. When we come back, I'm going to talk more about this Major Questions Doctrine, what the Chief Justice said, what the dissenters said, and again, why this case is important not only for debtors out there of student loans, but also for all of us. Stay with us for that discussion. That likes to roam around. I'm never in one place. I roam from town to town.
Summer, Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK has a new starting lineup. 4 to 6, The Devil's Advocates with Tom and Crude. Then at 6, The Maggie Dawn Show. WLAK.
ABC News, I'm Brian Clark. More than 370 flights in the U.S. have been canceled today, continuing what's been a difficult week of travel for thousands of air passengers like Lily. She was trying to fly out of Newark on Saturday.
10 minutes before it was supposed to start to board.
They just got over the intercom and was like, yeah, the flight to Indiana's canceled. And I was like, you're kidding.
Weather could also complicate travel today. The threat of severe storms for much of the country. Meanwhile, 60 million people in 14 states in the West and South are under heat alerts. Police in Baltimore looking for suspects in an overnight mass shooting that left two people dead and 28 others hurt, two of them critically. Authorities say it happened at a block party. A new ABC News Ipsos poll finds 53% of people believe the Supreme Court justices decide cases mainly on the basis of their partisan political views. And the White House says that when President Biden travels to Europe for NATO meetings, he will meet with King Charles and British Prime Minister Rishi Sunak. This is ABC News.
News is brought to you by Gingras Thompson & Wachs, a statewide team of personal injury lawyers getting you the justice you deserve. Call 855-954-1186 for a free consultation. The law firm of Gingras Thompson & Wachs has a track record of making life-changing, positive differences for their clients. $5.25 million to a woman who suffered brain injuries and her husband passed away when struck by a drunk driver. $1 million to three different individuals injured by drunk drivers. $1 million settlement to a man injured in a motorcycle accident. Call Gingras Thompson & Wachs, 855-954-1186. 855-954-1186. When it comes to achieving successful jury verdicts and settlements, one law firm stands out above the rest. Gingras Thompson & Wachs, a $6.2 million settlement for a woman permanently paralyzed as a result of medical malpractice. $4.9 million to members of a family injured due to the negligence of a truck driver and his employer. Call Gingras Thompson & Wachs today. 855-954-1186. All in to win. Gingras Thompson & Wachs.
GTWLawyers.com. With one call, the Civic Media Network of stations can deliver your business's message to the entire state of Wisconsin.
Or your hometown.
Marketing plans that work for your business. One call can do it all. Civic Media, 608-819-8255.
From the kennel to the coop, whatever the season, Fleet Farm has everything to keep your animals happy and healthy. From training your pup to sit season, to mastering those retrieval skills season. From clipping your horse for competition season, to keeping the backyard birds well-fed season. And of course, loving your pets like family season. There's a reason people say, if Fleet Farm doesn't have it, you don't need it. Because we have it all. Fleet Farm, built for real life.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
Democratic candidates are held to a higher moral standard. I don't see Representative McCarthy calling for George Santos to shamefully leave the halls of Congress. It is never principle above party. It is never principle and policy above person and personal achievement for Republicans.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
Monday through Friday at 6 p.m. on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. Up North News Radio with Pat Kreitlow.
I have Corrine Hendrickson, part of the Wisconsin Early Childhood Action Needed group.
It feels like they're trying to pit the teachers against the parents, and all of us can come together to say, look, stop trying to, you know, divide and conquer and work with us. And they're still trying to hide and say, well, the JFC cut it. There's nothing I can do. Yes, there is. You can vote for the amendment to continue child care counts.
Up North News Radio with Pat Kreitlow.
Weekday morning, 6 till 8.
On your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
I'm standing here outside your door. I hate to wake you up.
We are back talking this morning about the Supreme Court and now this major decision issued just yesterday, finding that the president's student loan forgiveness plan is unconstitutional as an overbroad expression and extension of executive authority. There's this thing called the major questions doctrine, actually a phrase not used by the Supreme Court, but applied to explain when the Supreme Court says that the executive branch, the president, can act. And my interpretation, the accessible interpretation of that doctrine, basically the Chief Justice saying if it's too new, we haven't seen this before, and it's too broad, too big, too large economically or some other way, it cannot stand consistent with constitutional principles. And indeed, that's exactly the basis upon which Chief Justice John Roberts said that this loan forgiveness program must fall. He said that this is 10 times $519 billion estimate, 10 times the economic impact that we found significant in concluding that an eviction moratorium implemented by the CDC triggered analysis under the major questions doctrine amounts to nearly one-third of the government's $1.7 trillion in annual discretionary spending. No serious dispute, he says, that the secretary claims the authority to exercise control over a significant portion of the American economy. That's what the Chief Justice writes in support of rejecting the president's plan here to forgive loans. Justice Kagan, arguing that this 2000 law that we cited previously squarely and plainly authorizes the program. She says this: the statute provides the secretary with broad authority to give emergency relief to student loan borrowers, including by altering usual discharge rules. What the secretary did here, she says, fits comfortably within that delegation. But the court forbids him to proceed. As in other recent cases, the rules of the game change when Congress enacts broad delegations allowing agencies to take substantial regulatory measures. In other words, a real affirmation of the authority then of the executive branch to do exactly what its name says, which is to execute the law. Sam Alito, Clarence Thomas, Neil Gorsuch, Brett Kavanaugh, Amy Coney Barrett join the majority opinion, again authored by the Chief Justice. Dissent, Elena Kagan also joined by Sonia Sotomayor, Ketanji Brown Jackson, also issued a harsh critique of this major questions doctrine. She says the question, the majority helpfully tells us, is who has the authority to make such significant calls? The answer, as is now becoming commonplace, is this court. Those are strong words coming from a Supreme Court justice. Key threshold issue, of course, as I indicated before, standing. An awful lot of people thought the Supreme Court was going to get rid of this case, dismiss it, based upon standing. When the case was argued in February, the justices seemed to focus on a nonprofit entity that services federal loans called the Missouri Higher Education Loan Authority. It was called MOHELA is the acronym for it. States argued that the entity's potential losses from the loan forgiveness program were so great, so significant, to confer standing on it, because it effectively ran an arm of the state of Missouri. They also said that the authority might fail to make payments to Missouri if the program were allowed to proceed. And appears that John Roberts embraced that theory. By law and function, he said, MOHELA is an instrumentality of Missouri. It was created by the state to further a public purpose, governed by state officials and state appointees. And that is the only basis upon which he finds standing. Very tenuous, not at all clear, circuitous at best, but nonetheless a basis for finding that the president's plan is not supported. The dissent, again, Justice Kagan says, in giving these states a forum, in adjudicating their complaint, the court forgets its proper role. The court acts as though it is an arbiter of political and policy disputes rather than cases and controversies. Deciding this case, she wrote, blows through a constitutional guardrail intended to keep courts acting like courts. She scoffed at the loan service's connection to the case, noting that it had not sued on its own behalf or was anyway incorporated into this lawsuit. She says this: is there a person in America who thinks that Missouri is here because it worried that Mohela's loss of loan servicing fees was important? I would like to meet him, Elena Kagan says, and goes on to say there's nothing personal in the dispute here, but justices throughout history have raised the alarm when the court has overreached, adding that the alarm was warranted right now. In a case, not a case, she writes, this is Kagan, the majority overwrites the combined judgment of the legislative and executive branches with the consequences of eliminating loan forgiveness for 43 million Americans. The consequences are huge. This is very significant. Again, the president indicating through the Higher Education Act that he'll pursue other means of doing what the Supreme Court has prevented him from doing. Great dissent, great disagreement among our court, not only about what this particular statute from a number of years ago permits the secretary to do, but also about the decisions among the branches of government, how those decisions are made, and allocations of authority that Congress passes the law and the president then is responsible for executing it through his cabinet, including the Secretary of Education. Strong disagreement here. And so further articulation, however, of the Supreme Court's view of a very limited government and certainly a very limited executive branch, not given the capacity, even with clear statutory authority, seemingly to do what it should do in furtherance of good things here in America. Tom, you've been waiting on the line for a while. We'll take your call now, your observation or question about any of this.
Hi there. I apologize. I'm putting the cart before the horse here because you haven't spoken of it, really. The whole website case.
Getting to that Tom. Question, good. Go ahead.
My question is, where is the line drawn between being able to discriminate against these people and serving people at a lunch counter, whether it be color or sexuality or whatever? Where is that line drawn now to refuse service?
Right. That is, Tom, thank you so much for that. Not just rhetorical question. That is the question of the day, right? Once again, the rule of all of these cases is opening up doors and raising more questions than they answer. And let's talk, Tom, at your very good, your very timely invitation about this fourth major case decided by the Supreme Court just this past week. This one, no less troubling than all the other, at least the other two cases that we have talked about this morning. The justices settling a question that was left open in 2008, in other words, whether businesses open to the public and engage in expression may refuse to serve customers based on religious convictions. That's kind of the way that the Supreme Court had styled this case. We'll talk more about that. Deciding just yesterday, as Tom just said, that a web designer in Colorado, the state of Colorado, who said she had a First Amendment right to refuse to design wedding websites for same-sex couples, despite a state law, again, not a federal law, but a state law here that forbids discrimination against gay people. Neil Gorsuch writes the majority opinion here, which is especially surprising. Let me pause here and talk about Neil Gorsuch for just a moment. Neil Gorsuch was the one who a number of years ago wrote this case in Bostock that said that the word sex, as it appears in Title VII of the Civil Rights Act, does in fact provide coverage for the LGBTQ+ community. Basically does include sexual orientation, gender identity. In the employment setting, prohibits discrimination, terms and conditions of employment, hiring, firing, all the other things when it comes to employment under Title VII. So when I saw yesterday morning that Neil Gorsuch was writing the opinion in this case, my initial reaction was, this is a good thing. Neil Gorsuch will be once again articulating an affirmation of the position not only of our LGBT community in our nation, but the right to everyone, consistent with Tom's question, to be served at the lunch counter, to have access to commerce. Hugely disappointed. Neil Gorsuch writing for the majority, a 6-3 majority, once again, right down ideological lines, saying the First Amendment protected the designer, her name is Lori Smith, from being compelled to express views she opposed. Again, all of this, a creature in very many ways of the Supreme Court's identification of the way this case was presented. The court says this, 100 years ago, Ms. Smith might have furnished her services using pen and paper. Those services are no less protected today because they are conveyed with a voice that resonates farther than it could from any soapbox. This case, again, framed as a clash between free speech and gay rights, nonetheless, the latest in this series of decisions in favor of religious people, one of which we saw earlier today, probably a good decision, and notably some conservative Christians out there. The decision also appears to suggest, once again, with not explicit statement, but nonetheless, sending this message to America that the rights of LGBT people, including those in same-sex marriages, are on a more vulnerable legal footing than they were a day ago, particularly when they are at odds with claims of religious freedom. Same time, the ruling appears to limit the ability of governments to enforce anti-discrimination laws. A great concern here. Again, the justices on this case, like the other two that we've discussed this morning, splitting right along ideological lines. In many ways, as I read these opinions, talking past each other. The majority saying that they're safeguarding First Amendment rights, the artists to express themselves in America, liberal justices viewing it as something else entirely, a dispute that threatens societal protections for gay rights and rolled back some recent progress. And once again, we're going to read again from some of the dissents here, an impassioned dissent once again from Sonia Sotomayor. She is angry. She is angry in a professional way, but nonetheless angry and concerned about America. She says that the outcome signaled a return to a time when people of color and other minority groups faced open discrimination. Tom, just as you said in your question about people being served at the lunch counter, the second time this week, once again, that she,
along with Elena Kagan and Ketanji Brown Jackson, articulate this rare disagreement from the bench itself. She spoke for more than 20 minutes. She said this case cannot be understood outside of the context in which it arises. In that context, Sonia Sotomayor says, the outcome is even more distressing. The LGBT rights movement has made historical strides, and I am proud of the role this court recently played in that history. However, today we're taking a step backward. President also said that he finds this decision, like the other we've talked about, disappointing. In a statement that he released on Friday, he says this, I'm deeply concerned the decision could invite more discrimination against the LGBTQIA plus Americans. More broadly, today's decision weakens longstanding laws that protect all Americans against discrimination in public accommodations, including people of color, people with disabilities, and people of faith and women. And indeed, recall well the history of this court that Sonia Sotomayor talks about when she describes this notion the Supreme Court in the past, in a case called Windsor, another case called Obergefell, has affirmed the rights, the privacy rights to engage in same-sex marriage, finding that the Defense of Marriage Act, defining marriage as between a man and a woman, as being unconstitutional, and then going ahead in a subsequent case a couple of years later, Justice Anthony Kennedy, in this lofty decision about the rights of all human beings, rights of all citizens to enjoy the liberties that we celebrate this very weekend, including the right to marry who you love, who you want to affiliate with for the rest of your life. Those are also traditions of the Supreme Court, not overruled by this decision yesterday, but coming in the wake of those greatly affirming decisions, a source of great concern, again, as articulated by the president and certainly by the dissenters in this. The Colorado law upon which this case is premised forbids discrimination against gay people by businesses open to public as well as statements announcing such discrimination. In other words, not only can you not discriminate based upon that immutable characteristic and others protected by the law, but you also can't announce that discrimination. And Ms. Smith, again, the plaintiff in this matter, this is very, very interesting in terms of the procedural status of this case, said that her Christian faith requires her to turn away same-sex couples seeking website design services that she would otherwise offer. Interestingly, she had not yet begun to provide those wedding services, nor had she posted a proposed statement on her current website declaring her policies or beliefs. She said she didn't do that because out of fear. She said she was running afoul of the law, and she sued to challenge that law, saying that it violated her rights to free speech and the free exercise of religion. Colorado's attorney general had said that the implications of the ruling yesterday could pave the way for all sorts of businesses to turn away LGBTQ customers. We're going to talk about the implications of that, things that Colorado attorney general said in our final segment coming up this morning, and also taking more callers about this all-important decision from a United States Supreme Court just yesterday. Stay tuned for that conversation.
Oh, babe, I hate to go. I'm leaving on a jet plane. Don't know when I'll be back again. Oh, babe, I hate to go.
The law firm of Gingras Thompson & Walks has a track record of making life-changing, positive differences for their clients. $5.25 million to a woman who suffered brain injuries and her husband passed away when struck by a drunk driver. $1 million to three different individuals injured by drunk drivers. $1 million settlement to a man injured in a motorcycle accident. Call Gingras Thompson & Walks, 855-954-1186.
All in to win, Gingras Thompson & Walks, GTWLawyers.com.
I'm Smokey Bear, and I made an assistant to help you out, because only you can prevent wildfires.
Hey, Assistant Smokey Bear, call me Papa Bear, because I'm grilling up dinner. Do you get it?
Yes, good job.
So, what should I do with all these coals?
Don't just toss them out. Put them in a metal container, because those embers can start a wildfire.
I understand. The stakes are high.
Ha, 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 ha.
Learn more at SmokeyBear.com.
Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council.
If I could be you,
and you could be me
for just 1 hour.
If you could find a way
to get inside
each other's mind.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
We've all felt left out. And for some, that feeling lasts more than a moment. We can change that. Learn how at belongingbeginswithus.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
Sometimes I just cannot believe all the storms we've gone through here.
I can only hope that we'll be able to leave this house to you one day, baby. You're our legacy.
Planning for these disasters will make sure we're safe, and is the best way to protect that legacy.
Protect your legacy. Visit ready.gov/plan for the tools and tips you need to start your emergency preparedness plan today. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
And we are back in this final segment of our program this morning, talking about this major case, the fourth major case we're discussing this morning, in which the Supreme Court sided in favor of a website designer in Colorado who's opposed to same-sex marriage. Majority opinion written by Neil Gorsuch. And again, in the interest, as we have all this morning, providing information about what both sides have said, Neil Gorsuch, writing for the majority, says the government could not force people who speak for pay on a given topic to accept commissions on that topic in cases where they disagree with the underlying message. Gorsuch goes on to say such an approach, he said, could lead to bizarre results. He cited the example of a Muslim movie director being forced to make a film with a Zionist message, or an atheist being forced to accept a commission to create a mural celebrating evangelical zeal. Went on to say, taken seriously, that principle would allow the government to force all manner of artists, speechwriters, and others whose services involve speech to speak what they do not believe on pain of penalty. Countless other creative professionals, too, he said, could be forced to choose between remaining silent, producing speech that violates their beliefs, or speaking their minds and incurring sanctions for doing so. He adds that states could not use public accommodations laws to deny speakers the right to choose the content of their messages. Otherwise, the justice wrote, the better the artist, the finer the writer, the more unique his talent, the more easily his voice could be conscripted to disseminate the government's preferred messages. That would not respect the First Amendment. More nearly, it would spell its demise. Again, the Supreme Court majority articulating this strong affirmation of the First Amendment and describing its opinion, contrary to what the dissent describes as being a First Amendment position. In dissent, once again, Justice Sonia Sotomayor describes public accommodation laws as designed to ensure equal dignity in the common market, a very common and important notion. She cites a 1964 Supreme Court case called Heart of Atlanta Motel versus the United States, where the court found that hotels did not have the right to discriminate against black guests. Goes on to say this, this is Sonia Sotomayor, if you've ever taken advantage of a public business without being denied service because of who you are, then you have come to enjoy the dignity and freedom that this principle protects. Lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgendered people, no less than anyone else, deserves that dignity and freedom. Justice Gorsuch responded directly to that and says that the two sides looked at the same case and saw totally different issues. Again, consistent with my view this morning that we've got a Supreme Court that's wildly disaffected on both sides with respect to who America is, what we're all about, what the law says. He goes on to say, it's difficult to read the dissent and conclude that we are looking at the same case. Dissenting justices, he wrote, focused on the strides gay Americans have made towards securing equal justice on the law. The conservative justices do not see the case through that lens. He says, writing that none of this answers the question we face today. Can a state force someone who provides his own expressive services to abandon her conscience and speak its preferred message instead? We've got a lot of opinions to read through here. Divided three-judge panel for the 10th Circuit applied the most demanding form of scrutiny in the court below and upheld the Colorado law. Significantly along the way in this case, there was also disagreement about the implications of George Orwell's statements, believe it or not. In the course of the lower court opinion, in a dissent in that case, the Chief Judge Timothy Timkovich had cited George Orwell, said the majority takes the remarkable and novel stance that the government may force Ms. Smith to produce messages that violate her conscience. And that approach seemed to resonate, if you will, with Justice Gorsuch. He said the language of George Orwell is relevant. He wrote, the court's liberal justices have abandoned what this court's case have recognized time and time again. A commitment to speech for only some messages and some persons is no commitment at all. He adds, citing Orwell's speech he gave called The Freedom of the Press, he says that if liberty means anything at all, it means the right to tell people what they do not want to hear. Justice Sonia Sotomayor said in her dissent, the conservative justice has completely misread this issue. Goes on to say this, the majority's repeated invocation of this Orwellian thought policing is revealing just how much of it misunderstands this case, and goes on to talk about the impact that this will have upon Americans generally inside the LGBT community and beyond. Among the other things that she describes, these kinds of things. She says the majority is simply wrong, profoundly wrong. The law in question targets conduct, not speech, for regulation. She underscores this notion. The Supreme Court is purposely describing this case in a way that doesn't get to the real issue. She goes on to say, and then the act of discrimination has never constituted protected expression under the First Amendment. Our Constitution, Sonia Sotomayor says, contains no right to refuse service to a disfavored group, and for that reason, I dissent. She goes on to say this, the state may ensure that groups historically marked for second-class status are not denied goods or services on equal terms. The concept of a public accommodation laws, which is what this case is all about, thus embodies a single, simple, but powerful social contract. A business that chooses to sell to the public assumes a duty, she says, to serve the public without unjust discrimination, rejecting both this First Amendment cast that the majority, six members of it, embrace and describe as the basis for supporting the website designer over the Colorado law. And in final commission, Justice Sonia Sotomayor goes on to say this about what this license to discriminate is, what she describes this opinion as being all about. She asked what it means to a family with same-sex parents to see a notice that reads, some services may be denied to same-sex couples. She says it reminds LGBT people of a painful feeling that they know all too well, kind of reminiscent of what Justice Kennedy had said many years ago in his opinions. She said they are not some public places. There are some public places where they can be themselves and some where they cannot. Ask any LGBT person, Sonia Sotomayor says, and you will learn just how they are forced to navigate life in this way. They must ask themselves, if I reveal my identity to this coworker or to this shopkeeper, will they treat me the same way? If I hold the hand of my partner in this setting, will someone stare at me, harass me, or even hurt me? It is an awful way to live. That's from our Supreme Court in dissent. That's Sonia Sotomayor, and I should indicate as well that the other liberal justices, Elena Kagan, Ketanji Brown Jackson, also describing a different America, which is the theme of much of our discussion this morning, describing a law that they view as very differently, the Constitution, a very different law as well. What do you take away from this case and the others? Well, plainly, the Supreme Court today, even in its description of this as being a First Amendment principled decision, has nonetheless turned the clock back. And we will see how this plays out. The specter of this being used to promote LGBT discrimination is out there and greatly concerning. On this program, we will continue to entertain voices from all aspects, acknowledging that reasonable people can disagree on things that are reasonably disagreed on. Some things, however, are in our Constitution, others are not. We'll talk about more of those next week as we consider again more Supreme Court cases coming out of this term. Stay with us for that next discussion coming up next Saturday here on Morning Cannolis. Thank you for joining me this morning. King.
But when the shadowy sun sets on the one that fires.
One call can do it all. Your business's message can be broadcast across the entire state of Wisconsin through the Civic Media Network of stations, or we can focus the campaign in your hometown. We have the flexibility. You have the control. Civic Media, 608-819-8255.
Are you interested in learning about becoming a regulated child care provider? We can help. Northwest Connection Family Resources is your local child care resource and referral agency serving northern Wisconsin. Call us today at 800-733-KIDS and talk about the benefits of becoming a family child care provider, including work from home, be your own boss, set your own hours, and be home with your own children. Free informational sessions are happening now. For more information, call 800-733-KIDS.
Hey, son, how are you feeling?
I'm fine, Pops.
What's on your mind?
I can't explain it.
When your kid can't find the language, find the lyrics. Start a conversation at Sound.
You're listening to Lake Air, WLAK 1260 AM Amory, and always streaming up.